IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
And you're welcome back. Good morning, Dolores, Annie, Kathleen, Hillary, Kevin and Kathy watching across our social media platforms and on our website. Just to invite you that you can watch the show too if it suits you. On your smart TV, the YouTube app's there for you, or on your Fire Stick, just put in Highland Radio Ireland and you'll see that we're live. That's good for across your mobile devices as well. And we're on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. A caller says, last year the law was that we couldn't go cashless in rural villages. There's a maximum distance that you have to have ATMs so that people can access cash. This is European law. Ireland is very slow getting involved, but we have to, by law, sign up to it. I'm not sure if I'm missing something or you're missing something, but that seemed to be part of the government's consultation that they are saying currently at the moment they're trying to introduce a system that sounds very much like you're texting, but the consultation remains open at the moment, as I say, unless I've missed something. I watched a poor young fella applying for his driving licence in the NDSL in Letterkenny. He was all excited but had to be turned away when he offered cash to pay for the licence. The staff were very apologetic. It's not their fault, but they are put in an awkward position by this card-only payment system. Okay, we'll have to check into that one a little bit more. Has anyone noticed the amount of graffiti on walls in and around Letterkenny saying Jesus loves you? Apart from the obvious, what's it all about? Can anyone explain who's doing it and what is the purpose of doing it? I haven't seen it. Is there a lot? I mean, the caller says there is, so there is. Jesus loves you. So who's doing it? What's the motivation other than maybe just passing on the message? But a caller wants to know, I think, is it orchestrated, organised? Is it an individual? A friend of mine went into hospital yesterday via ambulance at 6:30 in the morning. 39 hours later, he's still sitting on a chair waiting on a bed. What's going on there? 39 hours. Wow, that is not good at all. All right, we got this letter in. My family and I are living in an area of Donegal. Since the early 1980s, the houses we're living in originally belonged to the distant relations of my father's. We were cursed in the 1980s. What the property eventually needs is the right-sized sewer pipe going from the toilet down to the septic tank. One of the sheds needs to get its asbestos-sheeted roof replaced with a tin-sheeted roof. The whole street from beside the field, out the back, down to the bottom of the lane in the front needs to be resurfaced. Apart from the strip of land where the house is located, we own the field, Field A and Field B. I'm not a fan of farming, so I'd be wondering if it would be wise to rent out part of one along with two and three in the future. And also, they went on to say, and it's a bit of a change in tone, but the listener sent this in via letter. I'm wondering if there are any escort agencies operating in Donegal. I'd be interested in meeting up with women my own age, I'm in my 30s, as well as women from 38.5 years old to 58.5 years old. I would definitely like older, experienced women, as I would prefer to be seen by one. What is the law regarding sexual services in Britain and Ireland at the moment? Well, I don't know, to be honest with you. I think it's illegal to commission it as the individual. And I genuinely don't know how active the escort agency services is across the county. But as I say, the listener wanted to raise two issues there. If you have any comment on that, 086 60 25,000. Very pleased to welcome onto the programme now Gary O'Hanlon, Chief Chef and Consultant at O'Sullivan's Group in Paris. Good morning to you, Gary. Thank you so much for your time today.
That's all right, Greg. Happy New Year.
And same to you. You have been commenting saying that you were looking into buying a business recently. It was doing all right sales-wise. Digging a little bit deeper into to the prospects, something jumped out at you. Could you explain it to us?
In fact, it was an extremely successful business sales-wise. It has been for 20 plus years, and an opportunity's come up to buy it. And, I mean, I'm cooking at the highest level now for 30 years around the world, Greg, and people have often asked why I never owned a place, or I've just always invested so much of my time being an executive or a head chef that I never wanted another step in the ladder in ownership. But this was a property that I did want, and in the middle of due diligence, right now, and it could not. I mean, year on year, even post COVID, it's got better and stronger. But labour's gone up just a few thousand euros shy of double since 2019. And sales have gone up 300,000-400,000. I mean, so you're looking at a business that's trading in and around the guts of £1 million a year. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to say where it is, like, but now you're making a loss. And it's all down to inflation, food cost and energy cost. And I have to say, like, you know, having worked in France and still working in France for the last 5 years, you know, they love a protest in France. And yesterday I put out a tweet just about the fact I was more out of exasperation, Greg, than anything, you know, that I was like going, God almighty, like, this is such an unbelievable, you know, I'm 45, 15-year mortgage, whatever, will bring me right to 60. Like, it's absolutely perfect for me. I could probably kick it on another couple of levels. The timing couldn't be right. I'm in a position to buy it. And you're just like the numbers aren't adding up, you know. And it was only then that I really realized. I mean, you're watching from afar that business owners and peers of mine saying, you know, the government should be stepping in. Somebody's got to be doing something. But I've got to say, if this place is struggling, there is going to be a tsunami of closures coming. Mm. And just before I came on with you, I drove into town here this morning and I listened to Adrian Cummins. They did a report for Ivan Yates there in the Pat Kenny show. He's filling in for Pat this morning. But Adrian Cummins was saying like that they've looked into it, that a business turning £1 million in hospitality is going to have an additional 100,000 euro in cost on average in 2024, which was not the news I wanted to hear. Because, you mean, regardless of where it is right now, there's a minimum wage increase coming, mandatory pension contribution. I mean, I don't know why anybody
increased
in government...
Increased sick leave as well, don't forget it.
Yeah, that's right. The sick leave is increasing. And look, some of these things are all fair enough or whatever, you know, people need to live or whatever, but... You know, surely somebody in government has turned around and said to themselves, like, the amount of people that are going to be jumping on the dole come January, February, March, April out of the hospitality sector, surely subsidising energy or doing something about energy companies posting record profits at a time that people are on their knees.
So, Gary, you're looking at a business that is clearly successful in terms of the input, right? And then you have to look at the outgoings. And as a business person and looking at business models, the stuff you can control and the stuff you can't control. And it means it's an impossible business environment then if the stuff you can't control is leaving a very good business, you know, in the red. I mean, that's so even with your acumen and what have you, the country is set up as such that you can't go in and make a business out of it. You can't make the changes that would be required to make it the prospect. Well, maybe you can, but at this moment, you know, that. So really, as you quite rightly point out, are we going to see the house of cards collapse then? Because we are seeing businesses closing left, right and centre, but I'm not hearing the outcry. I'm not hearing anyone calling out and you pointed it out in your tweet, calling out the energy companies. They're record profits, and yet these, you know, tiny little decreases that we're seeing in the likes of energy costs, for an example.
You know, Greg, the Irish people, and the government knows this, we are not like the French. Like, we don't like protest, and anybody that raises issues, a lot of Irish people are nearly embarrassed to protest about business and the cost of business. They think it's maybe like a sign of failure, whereas in other countries around Europe and beyond, it's a mark of, you know, we're working hard, we're hardworking people, we're getting stuck in. And without sounding egotistical, I mean, I'm looking at a business that, without a shadow of a doubt, it's ran unbelievably well, but I'm coming from a position of, you know, a fairly decent reputation, and I know I can probably kick it on another couple of levels. And no matter, there is no chance that I would see green light coming out of it. I mean, you would just be a busy fool, you know what I mean? And what is the point in going into business to just constantly, month after month, year on year, just be paying bills? I mean, they spoke to a guy yesterday in Hearts in that report on News Talk this morning. And I know that bar, I know that owner, I know that property. And, you know, people saying to him, like, oh, you know, it's January and the place is packed. I mean, they're right beside Kildare Village. Of course it's busy. January sales right now. January's as busy as December in that neck of the woods. But as he says, there's nothing at the end of the year. He goes, we're running around doing 200 or 300, 400 people a day for nothing. And I can tell you now, there's a lot easier ways to make money than in restaurants and hotels and bars. When you turn around at the end of the year and you don't even have profit, it's soul destroying, you know?
How much of it is down to, you know, when you look at it, wholesale prices, the increases in the materials that are required for a restaurant versus energy. So say, for instance, you know, the energy came down 20%. Would that be enough, or do the wholesale prices also have to come down? Because, you know, there's probably more than the power companies that are gouging here and effectively going to destroy an industry if they're not careful.
Yeah, no, they are. Yeah. And look, I mean, I can't give you an exact figure. I mean, but without a shadow of a doubt, I mean, certainly 2023, although those figures aren't fully in yet, you know, there was a little tiny stabilization of energy, but not near enough. The VAT rate went back up actually this year. You know, the whole country that aren't involved in hospitality, Greg, have big opinions on restaurants and that VAT rate, you know, like, oh, prices weren't passed on, and so on and so forth. I mean, you look at Northern Ireland, the VAT rate's even higher again. Like, and Simon Rimmer, who's a very famous chef, he hosts that Channel 4 Sunday brunch or whatever it's called, 33 years. He's had his restaurant, closed it on Monday or Tuesday there with immediate effect. And that has sent shockwaves. I mean, I have a ton of chef friends in the UK, and that really sent a shockwave through the UK, because they're like going, Jesus, a business at 33 years can't see the light of day now. I think it's a really sad situation. You know, like, I think hospitality, as we saw during COVID, you know, it was really, really tough when hotels, restaurants, bars all closed. People couldn't hang out. None of these people are making gazillions. It's not like 20, 30 years ago you had a bar, you were wealthy, and you can't wear, you know what I mean? Like, food in particular, and it's not steak, it's not chicken, it's not pork, it's a tomato, Greg, it's a head of cauliflower, it's a head of celery. They've tripled, quadrupled in price. I mean, even yourself in your own house, I said, Annette, my wife, now, like, I pop into my local store, Super Value in Granard, where I live or whatever. I mean, you might be grabbing a wee bit of stuff. Somebody said, look, I'll grab stuff for the dinner. It's gone from 50-odd quid to 80 or 90 quid. Mm. And you're like, Jesus Christ, what have I bought? Yep. What have I bought? Like, you know what I mean? And in the hotel and restaurant sector, especially fine dining, Greg, right? You're buying the best of the best of ingredients, and that's a fact. You know, whether it's a spice, whether it's a salt, whether it's a seasoning, a dry-aged beef, you're buying even what you can't buy in a lot of stores. Like, it's expensive. Labor going up. And this isn't me going on crying. I am absolutely heartbroken. Mm. I want this business more than anything. I don't want to be flying to Paris for work all the time. It's amazing.
Yeah, but finally, Gary, you know, I think we all should actually take an interest in how hospitality is performing, because, you know, like, say, for instance, and this is not to I'm not trying to conflate issues, but say, for instance, if you're trying to run a restaurant here, like, hotels now are on the pig's back. Half of them have 100% capacity all year round, okay? So they're doing fantastic. But, you know, if the restaurants start closing, then that's a lot of people who are going to struggle to pay mortgages. That's a lot of students who are going to struggle to get through college. That means maybe the local news agency is not going to see the same footfall that it once did. And then we get into tourism. Do you know what I mean? The high costs that are having to be priced, it's going to start, you know, having an impact there as well. And tourism is a huge part of our economy as well. So I think everyone should be taking an interest, really, in how hospitality is doing. And I think you're quite right to point out that they're a little bit like teachers sometimes, whereby they're easy to criticise. You know, teachers get all summer off. The restaurants didn't pass on the 9%. You know, all that kind of stuff. But I think we kind of need to see through that and realise that this is a foundation block of the wider economy. You know what I mean? And if you look at the various challenges in different areas that I've been referencing there, you know, this summer could be a very quiet summer, or there could be nowhere to go. It could happen that quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look, you take Longford, for example, where I was in Viewmount House for 10 years, won Restaurant of the Year a few times. I mean, it was, I was there exactly, I was a week shy of 10 years in Viewmount House in Longford. And the people at Longford really took to me because, you know, obviously I was always very proud of being from Donegal, was always involved and still am anytime I'm asked and stuff that goes on in Donegal. But from a local level, for me living in Longford, the people that owned, you know, clothes shops in Longford, there's some brilliant menswear places here. There's brilliant clothes shops for women and beyond. There's, you know, fuchsia home design. There's all these. I would meet these people on the street or in bar and then buy you a drink because you're, I'm on the Today Show or TV or the restaurant. You're all the time pumping up Longford and talking well about the town. I want to bring people. I mean, there's no tourism at all in Longford, whatever Donegal has. So you got to fight your corner. And I needed people coming to the place. But that effect of a busy Viewmount House and the 12 or 13 rooms that we had being full every weekend, maybe half capacity during the week at corporate guests. But the ripple effect into Longford town of people getting into Anya's or, you know, Matt O'Brien's menswear during the day on Saturday, coming out and staying in Viewmount, going to Strokestown House to view it, to play the Longford golf course that was wrapped around my herb garden. It wasn't just the five-course or six-course tasting dinner in Viewmount House and staying over in a Georgian mansion house. They spent money in the town as well. And anybody that thinks any different, I mean, if tourists stop coming to Donegal, they're not playing golf in St. Patrick's Links. They're not staying at the Rosapenna. They're not going into Classic Casuals in Letterkenny whenever they're in town to buy something. They're not going anywhere. And as you rightly pointed out there, hospitality and tourism is the absolute foundation of business. And I think it's the biggest influx of money that the country has. And, you know, sadly, we're going to find ourselves like a lot of the high streets in England. I mean, I go over to United anytime I can with my wee boy. And I mean, some of the high streets are the most soulless places you ever seen, with chain restaurants and, don't get me started, you know, like it'll only annoy me. But, you know, all these lovely family businesses not being there, you know.
But the thing is yeah, it's happening in plain sight, you see, and you wonder why things aren't happening to sort of say, right, okay, this is where we could be in a year or two. Now is when we need to do something. And then we hear about how wealthy the country apparently is. Is it a case that we're just going to become a massive data center? I don't know. Is that the, you know, it's never been, it's not really being truly explained. I'll just leave you with one question, if that's okay. I think you've referenced this already, but it's from a butcher. Beef prices have never been cheaper. Chicken, pork, etc. I'm a butcher for 40 years. The only cost that has gone up for me is electricity. I sell fillet steaks at 4 for 30 euro. In a restaurant, they charge you 35 euro per steak. That's not my experience, but anyway. Restaurants are scamming people out of money. Beef has never been cheaper. I don't agree with what Gary is saying regarding price. But you talked about it. You actually quite... You
well, you can also you can also buy cheap shit beef, with all due respect. You know what I mean? You can buy cow fillets that I wouldn't give to a dog, or you can buy dry aged beef. So whatever butcher is talking there, he's chatting through his arse, Greg, and excuse the language, but any butcher that tries to chat to me about beef being cheap, he's buying muck.
Okay, Gary.
All right.
And on that note, I think as soon as you mentioned being a United fan, things went downhill in your mood there, Gary.
Yeah,
I don't know what the hell's going on.
I mean, that there kind of nonsense sends me mental. I mean, I could pick any ingredient and find you a cheaper alternative that I literally wouldn't give to a dog.
Gary, listen, stay safe. Thanks very much. Lovely to chat to you. Gary O'Hanlon there, chef and consultant at O'Sullivan's Group in Paris. High prices are driven by high wholesale costs, says the listener. Prices are still twice what they were in 2020. Price match between other companies is what will bring price down now. We need to keep bringing down wholesale prices. We need more renewable energy, more energy storage. We need to improve our infrastructure and our planning system. And we need to get on it right now. Right, yesterday we were talking about hospital food. We were talking to Gillian, whose experience was mostly in hospitals based in the capital. She says the food was muck, effectively. Then we had lots of people praising the great staff down at Letterkenny University Hospital. And now we're going to hear of Jimmy's experience. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Greg.
How are you getting on? Good to speak to you. Right, your experience in terms of what you might be able to eat or not eat is governed quite a lot by a severe nut allergy, Jimmy.
Yeah, I got nut allergy now since probably 17 years, I think, or something like that.
And Jimmy, so, before we get on to the crux of it, did that develop? Like, did you not have a nut allergy when you were younger, and then it came on you, or did you just realise, or what's the story?
No, it was New Year's Eve. It's my anniversary, so it's I think it's in 2006 or 2007, and actually that Christmas I was eating pistachio nuts.
Yeah.
No problem at all, but whatever I ate in a biscuit, it didn't work. It didn't happen right away, but when I woke up, when I turned around from my second sleep that night, I woke up like the Elephant Man.
Wow.
And then there was an itch, and there was all sorts of things, and then the now doc told us to ring the ambulance. So a lot of things anyway, but
it was a full anaphylactic shock eventually. Then.
Yeah, it was an anaphylactic shock. And when a person never had an anaphylactic shock, they don't know what it is.
Mm.
But anyway, what was it can anaphylactic shock, I think, can manifest itself in a number of ways, but maybe the more common one would be people, their airways would be choking,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, frozen. But mine's was a wee bit different, and I didn't know till after the GP told me what was happening. So basically, when I got to the New York, I was pretty much on the way out.
Wow.
And I announced to myself now, but he took my blood pressure, and he says, "Oh, it's fine." And then he says, "Guy up in the seat," and he gave me three injections: one adrenaline steroid and antihistamine. And within about 20 seconds, I was back to normal, like wow. Nothing ever happened.
Unbelievable.
And that's a bit crazy again. Yeah. But anyway, he said that my blood pressure was extremely low and my heart was ready to back up. So I was going to go easy. I was going to have a nice passage through. Well, I wasn't going to choke to death anyway.
Well, we still have you, Jimmy. Was it hard then to determine...
Here anyway.
Was it hard to determine... Sorry, and we'll get on to the situation you find yourself in hospital.
Yeah.
But was it hard then to pin it down to a nut allergy from there, Jimmy?
Well, there were a pecan nut in the Belgian biscuits, Christmas biscuits. You wouldn't eat. You would normally you wouldn't eat these biscuits only once in a lifetime probably, but they had a pecan nut in it, and I suppose again we were attending the GP or whatever, and they concluded that, you know, it must be a nut allergy, and then I had to stop eating nearly everything that came out of a packet. Mm. That would be anything that was processed, gravy, anything that had an association or could be cross-contaminated with nuts, which would be dried herbs, pepper, you name it.
Wow.
Pepper sauce,
all the good stuff by the sounds of it.
And the biggest casualty was porridge oats.
The biggest casualty.
And wholemeal flour.
This is the way you've had to live your life now for the last 17 years. Like, do you test if the allergy is still there, or do you have that allergy now for the rest of your life, Jimmy? Or?
Yeah, I think they are a test, and I think it's like about £300 euros that time, and I suppose it's a lot more now.
Right.
But I never went for it because I think that it would tell you that you were allergic to a specific nut, say pecan nut, mm-hmm. right? But that's no good really for me. It's no advantage for me because that pecan nut could be cross-contaminated with anything. I can't isolate
What about eating out, Jimmy? Is that a problem, or can you eat out?
Well, after that experience, then it was what would you eat, and a lot of it then was trial and error.
Wow.
You love to tell the tale, and you're okay, and you know, again, you can eat that to a certain degree. You know, you're probably taking about a 90% no risk on it, you know.
So do you know this reaction you had to this particular knot? Did that trigger something in you that started a broader allergy, Jimmy? Is there a medical explanation as to why up until you had that particular rare knot that you didn't have an allergy, and now that you have to be so cautious about cross-contamination and where you eat and everything? Is there were you given a medical explanation for that?
No, but I know that the allergies are getting more common. Mm-hmm. I had an aunt who and around about when she was about 80. She went to a restaurant and got seafood and developed a mad rash from it, and eventually possibly shortened her life, because she was a very healthy woman, looked like she was going to reach a hundred, and all of a sudden she was dead at 86 or whatever.
Unbelievable.
I know it's a big age, but you could see that it affected her life, but her lifespan, I suppose. But She was reared all her life eating seafood. That's all they had, I suppose.
Mm.
And for her to develop that at the age of 80, I think your body changes every so many years, seven years or whatever to say. And we do develop different allergies and different maybe rashes and different conditions.
Right, so do you have to carry an EpiPen now? So say, for instance, you do go out and there's that rare chance that you have a reaction. Do you have to go to a GP or the hospital, or do you have an EpiPen that you use? Or
I have two pairs of EpiPen, so I carry two with me, and then I'll have maybe two in the house. I usually keep two in the car and two in the house, so I'll either be in one place or the other.
Mm.
I only had one scare ever, and it was in Scotland in the Isle of Mull. And I suppose I didn't know where I was staying. I didn't know the address or the postcode, and when I needed a bit of an emergency, it was a bit of a handling. So I told them I would see them in the nearest pub.
Everyone knows where that was. Is, yeah. Okay.
No,
so,
I wasn't drinking, but I told them, you know.
Yeah, no,
that,
yeah, that was the landmark. I get you. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. But I only had day one experience, and it was a cross contamination, because I was I was drinking coffee out of a place that they prepared pastries and whatever. So it was a cross-contamination that happened at them.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that would have been just a slight cross-contamination that triggered that. So back to the hospital food then. This is a difficult situation for you then. What do you do? You did spend a time in hospital. What was your experience?
Yeah, well, I have a problem with a kidney stone. So it's nothing. I'm having a major ailment, but I have I had been in the hospital maybe about 10 times. So twice, maybe, or three times in Letterkenny. And the first time would be probably about five times after I got the anaphylactic shock. And the first experience I had of hospital was probably about 2012. And I had a very bad experience in regard to getting food.
So just generally speaking then, because that's almost a small part of the story, because your everyday life is complicated. You talked about grains, gravies. And then, so I want to ask you then, you have to check the ingredients of everything. I mean, how detailed and how understanding are manufacturers to people like you? Like, can you be confident if you read the ingredients in something that you can be reassured that there's either not stuff that you're allergic to in it, or there is not a risk of cross-contamination? Like, how set up is this world for someone like you to prevent yourself getting this reaction?
I don't think any guidelines on a packet can ever safeguard you.
Mm.
And I think that I usually have a specific set of food. I could nearly eat the same thing day in, day out. As opposed to buying it in the shop, it would be the same shopping menu I would have. But most things I prepare from scratch. I grow my own herbs. I prepare my own pancakes and scones or whatever like that. I usually eat meat. It's not prepared. It's steak or it's mince or it's whatever. It's just it's sourced. Everything that I eat is probably comes from. It's not processed.
Yeah, but ironically, you probably have a really good diet, Jimmy, because you're eating all unprocessed stuff, you know, fresh meat, growing your own herbs and veg. You know, ironically, you probably have a really excellent diet.
Well, what I can say about it is that when I cut out all them things and I couldn't eat them anymore, the 2 months after I had the anaphylactic shock, I lost 2 stone.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. I had a problem with cholesterol, and I was on cholesterol tablets on and off before that.
Mm.
And what I really can say about it is that I can eat trash, I could eat a fry day in, day out. I could eat greasy food, and I wouldn't develop cholesterol, and I actually have the best rate of good cholesterol that anyone can have.
My word.
And my blood's been always perfect.
All clear. All right, Jimmy, listen, come here. It's been an interesting, insightful conversation. Thanks very much for your time. I really do appreciate it. That's Jimmy there, who was talking or initially was reacting to the complications of a hospital stay, having a severe nut allergy, but I thought really quite interesting, actually, just to learn a little bit more about the life of someone with a severe allergy. 08660 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number there for you. All right, you're going to have Wongs, if it's not yourself, all around the house humming that tune. That is Chase the Sky, of course, becoming synonymous with darts on Sky Sports. So record numbers of you both here in Ireland and across Britain were watching last night as the World Championships 2024 came to a conclusion. Luke was going to win it. It wasn't Luke Littler, the 16-year-old. It was, in fact, Luke Humphreys. Alex Hughes is a young darts player from Inver in South Donegal. Good morning to you, Alex. How are you getting on?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Good stuff. Come here. You play the darts, do you? Do you play competitively, locally? Where did you get your love of darts?
Yes, I have done. So my journey started when I was about 9 years old. I received a dartboard from my grandmother for Christmas. And then from there on, I participated in my first local competition. And then I've gone on to play for Donegal and luckily enough to play in the World Masters and World Championships back in 2017. But at the moment, I'm currently focusing on my academics, but I hope to get back into it in the next couple of years and hopefully one day play in Ali Pali myself.
And how do you go about doing that? How do you be? I presume you have to go on the development tour, do you? But how do you qualify to get onto that? Is it an easy enough path, Alex? When I say easy enough, I mean providing you've got the skill to throw darts, if you know what I mean. But is there a pathway there?
There is a pathway. So most players will qualify through the development tour. I think If you finish in the, if you finish first on the development tour, then you gain your PDC tour card, and then the top 64 in the PDC order of merit gain entry to the World Championships. Now, how Luke Littler gained entry was by winning the Youth World Championships, which automatically got him into the PDC now that he's 16 years old. So you have to be above 16 to be able to do that. So I've just reached that age barrier myself. But yeah, it's quite a tough process, and it's very competitive. Darts is, the standard cross darts has really gone up very high in the last couple of years, and it's quite unpredictable who's going to win each competition.
It really is quite phenomenal. And indeed, Luke Humphreys last night referenced the fact that he doesn't think that anyone can dominate the sport now, like Phil Taylor might have in the past, that the standard is so high. But just, and fair play to Luke Littler too, what's he got £200,000, but also that catapulted him into the top 32. So he's off the development tour, and the world, the darting world is his oyster. But Alex, just put it into context to us, for us, how significant his achievement is as a 16-year-old. It's not just about throwing the darts. It's about, because you could, lots of people can do that on the floor, you know, in their house, perhaps not at that level, but to do it on stage under the lights against the best in the world at that age, not just the accuracy, but the calms, the nerves, the board management. How impressive is it as a fellow darts player?
Yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. He had no fear. He controlled every game himself. You know, he played his own game, and that's what was most important to him. You wouldn't have really seen a difference in him playing if he was on the floor or on the stage. You know, it made no difference to him, and he actually got better as the tournament went on. He grew in confidence. But yeah, he was absolutely fantastic, and he's a great ambassador for the game of darts. Really down-to-earth guy, and I was most impressed by how he dealt with the media pressure that was put on him, even from early in the competition, because that's a big thing a young player like that can go through. But he done very well, so yeah, it was very pleased for him.
Yeah, and I mean, he's going to win one, isn't he? I mean, maybe he didn't do it in his debut, but he's ripped up the record books, and there's just no doubt he's a future world champion. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he has time on his side, but he can definitely hold his head high and go into the tour this year with great confidence, and hopefully do just as well in other majors, and going forward definitely get that one championship, or perhaps multiple if he continues to this standard.
In his pathway to the final, he built his idol. He beat his idol in Barney, and there's the great footage of him throwing darts as a 3-year-old, inspired by the likes of Barney. There's no doubt that Littler now is going to inspire another generation. I mean, if I were a dartboard manufacturer, I'd be licking my lips this morning, because he's going to get thousands of young people across these islands and beyond playing darts, because you want to see what you can be, and he's done that for so many people.
Absolutely, he's been fantastic, and I think all the sponsors now in darts, the darts manufacturers, they have such great support for the players, and it's a great sport for anyone to take up. It's a really friendly, it's almost like a community, because people that are really dedicated to darts travel to each competition, and you sort of find familiar faces quite quickly. So yeah, it's definitely a good one to get into.
Have you any big scalps yourself, Alex?
Big scalps myself. Off the top of my head, I can't think of too many, but I was really pleased to be able to play in the World Youth Championships, and of course, back in 2017 as well, I would have qualified for the Red Dragon Champions event in Cardiff after winning the local competition here at Clady. So, yeah, that was probably the highlight of my career. But yeah, I've had some great moments so far.
It's early doors. Yeah,
so you've enough. Yeah.
And about Luke Humphreys too, because I think that another story that's been buried in this a little bit is him. He is a genuinely lovely fella, and him himself would be a brilliant face for the sport of darts. You know, because I remember I've watched darts all my life, and you kind of thought there was a time, you know, when the likes of Taylor were dominated, and all the players that he played with, you kind of thought, well, there can never be personalities like that in the sport again. But there's a new generation coming through, and a new generation coming behind them. That just goes to show it's a sport that's going to be around for quite some time, and it's never been as popular as it is now.
Absolutely, yeah. Humphreys is a great player himself, and he really showed last night the experience and the class that he has. especially being a youth world champion himself. So to go on and make that progression then to win the senior, the PDC, is absolutely fantastic. And especially after a couple of years ago, you know, he would have gone through the anxiety and the depression and not being able to play on the stage. But to bounce back from that and the way he did has been absolutely fantastic. And yeah, he's a brilliant guy to have as the forefront of the sport moving forward.
Right. Well, next, when you're in the Ali Pali, you have to answer the phone, Alex. You know, you have to stay local, support the locals, we'll support you. Listen, brilliant stuff, Alex. Thanks for your insight as a fellow thrower, as well as the likes of Littler and Humphreys. And as I say, sounds like there could be big nights ahead for you as well. Lovely to chat to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Alex Hughes there, a young dart player from Inver, who's already blazed a trail on the youth circuit and has big aspirations for the seniors down the line.